You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with Candace Wirth. Candace, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about Wirth Advisory. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is that that you do and what the company does?
Sure. So Wirth Art Advisory is a private advisory firm that I started about 15 years ago to help people who are new to the idea of buying art, to help them kind of navigate the art world and kind of be a go-between for those potential buyers and galleries and artists. So that's sort of at the core what it was founded to do and what I continue to do today.
And when you began doing that, just to get right into the mission, how does something like that begin? I mean, now it seems to be more organized, or maybe this is just my perception of it, but really that there are people that get into private advisory at all different levels, because you're kind of inventing, in the sense, how people navigate the world, aren't you? I'm trying to come up with, how you come up with a program to kind of guide them.
Well, I will tell you that when I started doing this, which was 2001, it was right after 9/11, and there was a very, very different precedent for art advising as a professional field. There were a few people doing it. There was Theo Westreich and Mary's Lott and some of the really established advisors, but you had nothing like the scene that you have now. While I knew who they were because I had been, I started my career at Christie's. I was at Christie's for about 5 years, so I knew who a couple of the big advisors were. I didn't really understand it as a profession. I had some friends who were artists, and I had some friends who started to make some money in their first jobs. And the friends who started to make some money asked me to take me to the studios of my friends who were making art. And it was incredibly innocent, and people started to buy a few things here and there. And I said, you know what? I love doing this. This would be such a great – I'm going to see if I can kind of do this and get paid for it. So it really – I had no grand ambition to grow a company based on that concept. It was actually quite organic and really came from that impetus.
Well, that's really wonderful. So that is such a kind of intuitive way of doing it, you know, especially since the goal wasn't even sales initially. So how did it first get started as a business? Because then you have to find more people like your friends that naturally came to you, more people who are interested in building collections on a certain level, because you're introducing them to a certain segment of artists, right, which are young,
yeah,
living artists for the most part.
Yes, mostly living artists, that's correct. It was a bit of a word-of-mouth thing, you know. One or two people bought, and then I had another friend, and so I'm renovating my apartment. I need some art for my apartment. And it was these very kind of, nobody walked in the door and said, hey, you might be able to help me build an art collection. It was very, and even today I think this idea of building an art collection is not really how people kind of start. It's more of I'd like to buy some art. I'd like to buy a few things. And some of those people who initially start buying become people who build collections with specificity. And many people, and I think if people were honest, dealers and advisors, about the broad sort of buying public, most people are just buying art. They're not they're buying across the board, and they're not buying with an eye to build a very specific collection with specific parameters.
What is the parameter between wanting to being the type of buyer who is buying because you just want art in your home or office, as opposed to what is the degree, or where do you draw the line between someone who's actually building a collection?
I guess maybe when someone has no walls left, they're officially building a collection. I don't know. I don't know where you draw the line. I mean, I think it's more about how engaged that buyer or collector is, how much they want to learn, how much they want to refine the parameters, that would determine which artists they buy and which artworks they buy. I'd say it probably has more to do with that.
So now the conversation is. I mean, so let's talk a little bit about that. Maybe building connection, a collection, walking me through that a little bit. If you're taking someone to an artist studio who says, as you know, some form of that initial question, take me to some, you know, artist studios. I'm interested in some art. Is there a conversation that you're encouraging in terms of the type of artist they may be collecting, or politics, or anything else? Talking about all those things?
Yes. I mean, you have to have an understanding of what drives the buyer. I mean, it's really the only way to find the artworks that will appeal to them. And there are buyers who are interested in more political, politically well thought out art. There are buyers who are more interested in feminist art, or art by women, or art by African American artists, or, you know, in that sense, or just drawings, or photography, or paintings. So those are sort of some of the things that you kind of think about, in addition, obviously, to budget, wall size, some of those things which are pretty important in terms of people making decisions.
And so now you're at the moment, besides directing the company, are you also working directly with clients and doing artist studio visits or gallery visits? Are you still doing that regularly?
Oh, yeah, all of the above. I mean, that's exactly what I do. I mean, I have more people to help me, and I have more people to buy for, but that's exactly what I do.
And so where are you looking these days? What are you finding, and where are you looking just in terms of your own curiosity for new artists, which you must be looking for all the time, I would imagine.
Yeah, all the time. I mean, all the time, everywhere. I just spent a week in L.A. looking at art at the various galleries and in artist studios. I go to London, I go to Berlin, I go to Basel, Paris, L.A., obviously the fair in Miami, a couple of other fairs here and there. I mean, you know, you have to move around a little bit and see what's going on. It's very hard to actually cover it all. Frankly, I find it very challenging.
Well, you're moving around a lot, and you're covering a lot of ground. This is hard to cover it all, but what are you seeing as you're covering the amount of ground that you are? You're seeing all the big centers of sales in the arts, all the big cultural centers, and it sounds like you're looking in commercial realms as well as non-commercial realms.
Mostly commercial realms. I mean, I would say the majority of what I do, I buy from galleries. I mean, I'm steeped in the commercial side of this business. I mean, I'm not, you know... While I go to artist studios and visit artists that I like and support and, you know, want to continue to buy, I'm not buying directly from the artists in almost any case.
Right, you're buying from the gallery. And are you seeing any particular trends now in one country or another as you travel around the world? Are you looking at a lot of painting, for example, as opposed to more conceptual work that was... perhaps in vogue 10 years ago?
Yeah, I look at a lot of painting. I mean, I'm partial to painting. But I look at sculpture. I look at some video. Lots of works on paper, photography. It's not really – the country necessarily doesn't drive kind of what you see. I mean, we're so interconnected now. I mean, the artists who show in Berlin show in New York, and they show in Los Angeles, and they show in London. It's not like you sort of go to another country and you're floored by all of these different ideas. And I would say New York still feels pretty central. So I can see an enormous amount in New York and augment that with, you know, what I'm seeing in other places.
It still feels central to you, New York, as opposed to L.A. or Berlin or...
I mean, honestly, I don't even think there's a comparison.
Right.
I mean, that's
why,
how...
Why is that? I mean, I'm a New Yorker, too, so I'm not going to argue with you, but why is that, do you think?
You know why it is? Because you have a depth of buying power in New York that you just don't have in other places. You have the history of the gallery system here, which is long established, and you just have a buying pool here that you don't have in other cities. I mean, Los Angeles is phenomenal. It's great for artists, but there's no comparison commercially. In terms of the galleries. Doesn't mean there aren't great galleries there. There are phenomenal galleries there and great museums. But in sheer numbers and volume, there's no comparison.
But I would think the buying pool would be huge in L.A. too, that there would be an enormous amount of collectors and buyers in that area.
They're there, but it doesn't compare to New York. That's my experience. That's my experience.
That's interesting.
And again, it's not a qualitative judgment. It's a quantitative judgment. It's just a numbers game. Just don't have the number of collectors in those places that you have in New York.
Right. Well, and then there's the collectors that are at the different fairs. I mean, they're coming from all over the world. Aren't fairs, in a sense, the new center? I mean, it seems there is more activity than at the fairs than there is in New York during some times in the season.
For sure. The fairs are an enormous center of sales activity. I mean, it's you can't, as a gallerist, a collector, they can't be avoided.
So that's changed a lot in the 20 years that you've been working, right? Fairs have come into prominence more and become more central to your place.
Oh yeah, it's changed everything. It's changed how galleries stagger their inventory. It's changed how they stagger their, you know, how they work with artists. It's changed how collectors buy and think about buying. Oh, I might not do something huge in October. I'm going to wait for Miami. It's changed everything.
Huh.
And for some people, it's the only place that they really see a huge volume of, you know, if they're not really going to spend the time at the galleries, you know, in New York or London or in some of the other centers, imagine how much they can see in one place at an art fair. You can go to Miami in 3 days and see, you know, an unbelievable volume of art.
Right.
I just keep going back to Miami.
Is it about seeing the unbelievable volume, or it's about buying it? People that you're talking about are going there with someone like yourself to help them buy the work.
I think it's both. I think it's exciting to buy, but I also think it's about being able to see such a huge number of things in one place. I mean, even if I had a client come in from out of town in New York and we spent, you know, a good afternoon on the Lower East Side and a good afternoon on in Chelsea and or uptown, think about spending 2 full days at an art fair.
Right, but that's exhausting too, isn't it? You know, that's just like spending 2 full days at the Met or something. You know, as amazing as it is, it's kind of sensory overload.
It's overwhelming. Yeah. Fairs are tough.
So that must have changed. That must be changing your job a lot, because then you're educating them, you know, and discussing art in a completely different context that is holding, you know, the extraordinary amount we're talking about at a fair where you can walk around for 2 days.
Yeah, it's very challenging. The fair environment is very challenging. It requires a lot of prep work if you're really focused and you have someone who's very focused and you really want to make the most of their time. It requires a fair amount of prep work. But we've gotten used to it, you know. I'm much more organized now than I was when the fairs first started to dominate.
And what do you see as the future of art advisory or collecting? I mean, art seems to be, you know, something that it's collected more, prices are rising, the fairs and the market all seems to be healthy. I'm not really talking about economic predictions, but does it seem that more and more people are getting involved with collecting art? Is this just because of the economy doing so well, or is there more and more, you know, if I can say the word, kind of cultural literacy, more people interested in the arts?
100%. I mean, I think it's both of those things, and I also think that you have an unbelievable amount of information that people can access. So, you know, 10 years ago, most people couldn't access the information that they can now. Now you have the internet. I mean, you have all of the pricing is clear on ArtNet. I mean, it's not clear, but you have a lot more information at your fingertips than you used to. So I think that has also helped people to be able to pick up the phone and do things and feel more comfortable with doing things than worry about having to, you know, get on a plane, go meet a dealer, feel rejected in a gallery space. Everything's changed.
What are the options to that? You're talking about the artist experience, getting on a plane, or you're talking about the collector's experience?
No, the collector's experience. I mean, we're talking about how, you know, how expansive and how many more people there are buying art now.
Right.
I think that people have more money, but I think they also have a lot more information and a lot more access than they used to.
Well, and what does that mean exactly? I mean, the feeling I always had about, you know, the art system of just, you know, maybe 20 years ago is that collectors had to be vetted. They had to have a certain type of collection to, you know, be worthy of standing in line for a certain type of art. I mean, is that part of the changes you're talking about in how people have access to information? Is that system still there, or
yeah,
were we talking about something else?
It's still there. I mean, it depends on the artist that you're talking about, you know. I mean, I think that there's something for everyone, you know. The art market is enormous. There are so many galleries, so many artists, so many ways to buy art at so many different price levels. So for certain artists, there's always going to be, you know, a difficulty getting work. Maybe it's an artist who doesn't produce a lot. Maybe it's an artist whose prices are a lot bigger on the secondary market than they are in the primary market. You know, you will always have some of that for some artists. And for many artists, you won't have it. I mean, it really, you know, there's kind of something for everyone.
That's true. And so in primarily you're working with galleries. Are they from all over the place, or is it the Lower East Side or Chelsea? Is there any particular areas that you tend to go to now?
No. I mean, I really buy everywhere and for everyone. I mean, I look at everything now. I mean, I work with a very wide cross-section of collectors, buyers, clients. So I have to look at everything. So I look on the Lower East Side, I look in Chelsea, I look in Berlin, London, I look at everything.
You know, what's exciting about talking to you, and I've talked to a few other art advisors, is you're obviously, it's kind of the opposite of being sort of cynical about the art world, as some people can be. You're enthused. You're looking at all this great new art all the time, and you're sharing your interest and excitement.
It's the greatest job
in
the world. What's there to be cynical about? I mean, yeah, it's a challenging profession, and there are problems, and it's not without complexity, but come on, it's a phenomenal job.
It sure is, and for all the work that you're seeing, you know, you must see lots of tons of artists that I've never heard of, that most people have never heard of. You're seeing a lot of new work out there, and I imagine a lot of vitality, a lot of great energy. I mean, what are you seeing? If we can be that broad, is it just all over the place kind of art you're seeing at a variety of galleries, or are there trends that you're looking at all?
I mean, trends, you know, we can talk broadly about things that have been kind of widely reported, you know, this sort of going back to figurative painting, people getting a little sick of a lot of the process art that we've seen over the last few years. So people really being a little bit more focused on figurative painting now. I mean, that's been sort of a year-old or longer story. And there are lots of great figurative painters, and it's a little bit harder to sell. It's not so easy to live with figurative art. It tends to be really strong, and it's harder for people to get their head around. But I think it's nice that that collectors are kind of – there's a bit of backlash against all of these over-speculated, often cases, mediocre artists making art that was really produced for the market and not really produced for its ideas.
Very interesting.
But
another work, you're seeing other paintings and different kinds of work that's non-figurative and kind of all over the board.
Yeah, everything. I mean, I looked at. I can look in my. You know, I probably got 10 previews today for shows that are opening all across the board. You know, early Tom Wesselman collages at David Zwirner in London, and then artists on the Lower East Side that I've never heard of. You know, I'm looking at Aaron Sheriff's museum show that's opening on Friday night. I was looking through images of that installation. I mean, that's more conceptual photography, photo-based work. I wouldn't call it photography. I mean, it's a big world out there. I saw a German painter that I really liked in Los Angeles, who I'd seen once or twice, shows of Nagurum Schneider in Berlin. And there were a few paintings in a gallery in Los Angeles. They were getting ready for the Los Angeles Fair in 2 weeks. I mean, there's just, you know, those were under $10,000. Other things are, you know, many more zeros. But it's there is so much art to see. It's just about how much time you want to spend looking.
That's true. And it's been wonderful talking to you about this and about art. At the moment, you're... I suppose working on just looking around, seeing all these new shows you're talking about. Is there anywhere you want to point listeners to in particular? The people are listening to this from all over the world, and you've mentioned a couple of wonderful places even just now. But is there any show in particular or place you want to point listeners to? There will be texts and links in this interview as well.
I would say in general there are, you've got quite a few established galleries moving from Chelsea to the Lower East Side. Galleries like Alexander and Bonin, who have been around a long time and represent a very established roster of artists.
Betty Cunningham has moved down there too. Right?
Betty Cunningham, exactly. CRG Gallery has been around for 20 years. In addition to all of these great kind of upstarts, I mean, I just got some list the other day, 5-6 new galleries. I hadn't heard of any of them. So, and then you of course have the galleries that have been down there for years. But there's so much going on. There's a figurative painting show at Zach Foyer's space on Grand Street by Jane Corrigan, which is just fantastic. And there's really great stuff going on the Lower East Side. I encourage people to go and support those galleries because those dealers are the ones really finding the new talent around and really taking chances.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. Ken, it was really a pleasure talking with you today. Thanks so much for spending this time with me.
Thank you, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.